So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
Sure, I hit record.
I just hit record too.
Okay.
It's recording.
It's recording. Welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
The Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates! Which you would think might be a sports team that plays hockey or something like that, but in fact is a movie from the 80s.
Yes, an amazing movie, which we're going to tell you all about.
It's but a great first, movie.
It's so good. But first, a couple of front things. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Ned. This is Meg.
Yo.
And you can email us. You can go to our website, fcbm.io, and you can find our contact information there. And you can email us directly. That's the best way to get a hold of us. We'd like to hear from you. But you can also just email Dana, the CEO and founder of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And she would be delighted and tickled to hear from you. So you can email dana@fcbm.io. That's dana@fcbm.io. Okay. I think that's everything.
Yes.
I think we can actually get into this movie. I was wondering if like maybe what I should do is have a little browse through how I sucked you into watching
yes,
this movie.
Yes, our chat. Oh my God, so great.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, you could rent movies from the video rental
yes.
store. And I think it was a Videoland. There were a couple of video stores in Coronado where I grew up. And I think it was Videoland where I saw this movie the first time. Now, it came out in 1984. So I'm guessing that I was renting it in the early 90s.
Okay. Yep.
I was born in 78, so...
And I was born in 79.
Yeah, so I was probably... It's probably like 90, 92. That's like when the peak video rental stuff was going on as well. Like maybe late 80s, like 89, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is... I don't even know where to begin. So I'm scrolling through here. The problem is we chatted so much.
Yes,
when did we watch this? 2 days ago?
2 days ago. We live chatted it the entire time. So there's like an hour and a half of our real-time discussion about what's going on in the movie in our chat.
Yes.
I managed to find the top of the conversation because it starts with a photo of your projection of the movie on the wall.
So before that, the impetus for this, so you stay there and you'll get onto that.
Yeah.
Our chat was like, I'm sitting at home, like doing, I have some like projects and shit, and I like throw up YouTube on my projector on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of scrolling through looking for something just like long that I just don't have to think about that maybe I've seen before. And so the Ice Pirates comes up and I was like, great, perfect. Seen that before. Throw it up there. And then I just send you this like innocuous text on Tuesday at 5 o'clock Western time or Pacific Standard Time or Daylight Savings Time now. I don't know. On the West Coast. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Nobody cares. I'm watching this old movie called Ice Pirates, I say. While I work on some side projects, have you ever seen it? And you're like, no. Is it good? You give the arms up shrug emoji. And my first response is, it's full of inappropriate sexism and inadvertent racism. It's got lots of janky ass practical effects, but it has its charm. And you're like, kind of intrigued. Then I go, like, lots and lots of extras. Crazy scenes with all kinds of weird ideas of what the future might be like. And then your next response is Angelica Houston interrobang. Which, if you don't know what an interrobang is, we have a whole podcast episode about that.
Right.
It is basically the exclamation point question mark combination. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then my response is ostensibly it's about some future galaxy that is out of water and humans live in a feudal system.
And I said,
and then
oh boy.
I don't finish that sentence because it gets derailed by Angelica Houston. Right. Which I love that, like, your response to this was, like, we're talking about Angelica Houston, and almost the next thing you say after Angelica Houston is, you know, she was at Roman Polanski's house when he fucked that kid. Like, just like, you know, the important trivia.
Cut,
like,
to the chase.
Yeah.
She might be culpable. We don't know. And Christopher Walken, separate incident, was on the boat the night Natalie Wood mysteriously drowned, i.e. was killed by her husband.
Yes. It's like, what?
Hollywood crimes.
Right. Hollywood crimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, after that little tangent, so you ask, is Ice Pirates a recommendation then? Like, should I watch it?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, it sort of is.
Watch,
like,
it now.
Know what you're getting in for. I mean, I would love to podcast about it. And you're like, fuck yes, that's all you need to say. Haha, watch it. So we throw it up. So it's right now it's free on YouTube Premium. So we both have that. So we were like, watch it together. And so then the thing I say is, it's like someone was like, you know, Star Wars and Spaceballs and Star Trek and Alien. What if instead of all that, we made a movie about pirates in space and we just pushed through and didn't let anything stop us and then released the movie?
I think that is a spot on description of this movie and the thrust behind it. Like,
right.
Top notch.
And I love how I'm just like stumbling through it. So I say that, like, this incoherent mess.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, did I mention it has robots? It's got robots.
Yeah.
And eunuchs. And don't forget the eunuchs.
Right.
Yeah.
People getting their balls
chopped
off. Oh, and
space herpes. Also space herpes. Yes,
which is hilarious because, well, we'll get to that. I'm not even going to bring it up yet. We'll get to it. So I also mentioned, cocaine wrote the script. Barely had to even think about it. The less you think about it, the better, probably.
Yeah. Don't think too hard on this.
And then you said something that, like, really kind of set the tone for the rest of the movie. And I ended up agreeing with you entirely. You said, I love the set and costume designs. And I wasn't even, like, expecting that to be any good. Like, I thought, oh, God, this is some, like, bizarre 80s space mashup movie, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be kind of like cheap knockoffs of everything. And to my point there, we actually realized, like, well, this movie was made in like 1984, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which means that in some cases it predates other movies that, like, so when I was watching this, let me back up. While we were watching this movie and going through it, I've never seen it before. And there's a bunch of stuff in here that reminds me of other space movies. Like, there are so many things that remind me of The Fifth Element. But, of course, it would be The Fifth Element reminds me of this, not this reminds me of The Fifth Element, because The Fifth Element came after. So saying it reminds me of The Fifth Element is kind of anachronistic, because this was before by a significant margin.
Although somehow that anachronism would be appropriate for this movie.
Totally. so
we were going to steal all elements from The Fifth Element. It just hadn't been made yet. But as soon as it comes out, we're calling that. That's us.
That's us.
We stole from them. Yeah.
We did that.
Yeah.
So, like, we decided to sync up our videos and watch it together. And live chat about it the whole time, which was great. It was hilarious. I said something about, like, oh my God, Angelica Houston, and oh my God, Ron Perlman is in this too, except he's like 10 years old. I mean, not literally 10, but he looks like he looks kind of like an older child. And I was like, man, I have had a crush on him since Hellboy. And you said, haha, yes, don't get too attached to his hand. Which is super funny because he gets his hand chopped off later in the movie, and it's like
pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but possibly the hand comes back. Like, it's so, this movie is rated PG, which I don't know how it is, because it has a certain level of gratuitous violence to it. Like, I get it's not really gory, but it's just a lot of, like, really, like, anyway, sorry, go on.
There's a whole scene where everybody's on a conveyor belt to get their balls chopped off by a thing that looks like a set of metal dentures. Chomp, chomp, chomp.
Yes. Yeah.
Sharp metal dentures.
Sharp metal dentures.
So, yes, exactly. One of the things that's sort of, like, both highly amusing and also very confusing about this movie are the sort of like mishmash of genres that are going on. For example, like there's a lot of references to things like Nottingham Forest, like Robin Hood. Like there's a bunch of people who you're like, this is just, wait, what's happening here? These people are dressed up like Robin Hood, and there's like the weird prince and like all these things. And I thought it was kind of funny that they have all of these, they have not only sci-fi completely fabricated ideas, like very futuristic and things that don't necessarily exist in the real world, like humanoid robots. But there's also like these sort of actual historical references or references to mythology like Robin Hood, which was not actually historical. So like, it's interesting because they draw on so many, like so many genres and time periods and things that are true and things that are not true and things that were from history and things that we imagined from whole cloth. And like, it's just this mishmash of genres. And what's funny to me is that like a lot of it is like, why would you be wearing chainmail in space?
Yeah,
that just doesn't make sense. Like outfits they're wearing are so practical. Anyway,
yeah. So let's do a quick synopsis before we get to go down into.
Yes.
That.
Okay.
So,
good idea.
So this movie we're talking about is called The Ice Pirates. It was directed by Stuart Raffel. It was written by Stuart Raffel and Stanford Sherman. It's produced by John Foreman, and it stars Robert Urich,
yeah.
Mary Crosby, Michael D. Roberts, and as we mentioned, also Ron Perlman, Angelica Houston, people of note that you know that have kind of, and there are quite a few people actually who are named cast members, and then there's just a huge set of
extras.
What's it called? Extras. It was released in 1984. It's 91 minutes long. The budget was $9 million, and it made about $14.3 million at the box office. It has abysmal reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
Let's start a movie review site called Rotten Potatoes.
But I will... I will point out that like many good movies like this, I don't know if you're familiar with Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, I know you are, Meg, but as a listener, if you're not familiar with Rotten Tomatoes, oftentimes there's the official score from like recognized critics, and then there's the audience score.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has a 17% official score for Rotten Tomatoes, or 17% fresh, but 50% audience score, which is, I think, accurate for this movie, right? Because like if you're looking at it from a very critical, like let's compare it to other contemporary like budgeted films and things, like it's, you know, it's, well, we're gonna get to that. So the thing, I think the other thing to set the tone for this movie that really like illuminates a lot of like what we experience is that so for the production, the film was made by made at MGM under David Begelman with John Foreman as producer. So I'm actually kind of cribbing directly from the Ice Pirates Wikipedia webpage.
Nice.
As of, what is it, June 15th, 14th, 11th, 13th, June 13th, 2024. So anyway, long story short, it was originally going to be a high budget film, or it was going to be a $20 million budget. It was going to be called The Water Planet. It was based on a script by Stanford Sherman, who we kind of mentioned earlier, who was incidentally also the writer of Krull, if you're familiar with that film.
Classic.
So, however, MGM, they were in financial dire straits, and their bankers were like, nope, $8 million is capped on all films right now. Begelman, I guess I'm just gonna go with Begelman. Sorry, buddy, if it's pronounced differently, please write in, and I will absolutely make a whole hour long podcast apology and correction. I would be delighted to do so.
Yeah.
So anyway, Begelman and Foreman contacted Stuart Raffel, the titular hero of this podcast, potentially.
Yeah.
Whose film High Risk, a 1981 film, which I'm not familiar with, but will be in the coming weeks. They were basically impressed by that movie, and they were like, Raph will come, you know, come work for us. And he's like, I'm going to have to rewrite it to make it more comedic or more comic. They're like, totally great. And then there's like a last little kind of throwaway line in here about how they said movies like The Crimson Pirate, like these pirate movies, were really like inspirational for them.
Okay.
For the rewrite.
Yeah.
And they deliberately did not watch Star Wars, which I think shows. I think we talked about that, or we'll talk about it more. So that's like kind of the meat and potatoes, like the bulk of it. So
yeah.
The sort of the summary of this film, like just so you can kind of get a sense of it, is essentially kind of it, the opening. Well, we can just get into our, now we can kind of go through, right? Like
yeah.
we can talk about our experience with it, like, especially in our chat, which is so funny.
Yeah.
Or we had such a, it's funny to us. We had such a good time. I mean, we're not going to read directly from the chat the whole time, but,
right.
But essentially it opens up with these like opening credits with what I can only describe as this like Robin Hood font of the 1980s.
Yes, very like Robin Hoody.
Like, what is it? What's the kingdom that Robin Hood is?
Sherwood Forest, Nottingham.
Like Nottingham. Nottingham. It's like that very like, you know, you expect with the font that comes up that says the Ice Pirates and this very like sort of gothic, but not, it's not quite gothic.
It's like Old English.
Old English kind of like heavily, you know, like illuminated script,
mm-hmm.
Style.
Yeah.
The Ice Pirates. And then there's this, I forget, like just like Star Wars.
Yes.
There's like that intro card that
the
like
scrolling
tells you
the text, yeah. setting,
right? The scroll of text.
Here's the situation in the universe.
Yeah. Except it doesn't do the Star Wars like fade off into the distance.
Right.
Tilt. It's just like kind of static.
So many old movies used to have the like heavy reading yes. at the front end.
Right. And I mean, this is where I think like it wasn't quite a, I think if you look back, you might be like, I would understand that you'd be like, that's a Star Wars ripoff. You know, they used yellow font and they told the story right at the beginning. But the Star Wars thing was with George Lucas's like the text scrolling off into the distance away from you.
Yes.
Which is very different than what this was. This was like a static card that was much more common, like you said, for lots of movies before and after Star Wars.
Yeah. And there's no, excuse me. God, I almost choked. There's, I got so excited.
Don't do that.
There's no tilt to the font. Like you said, it's right. not like moving away from you. It scrolls. It's just like static and centered on the page or whatever.
Right.
Screen.
Yeah. So then we kind of meet our gang of pirates right on their ship that they're, yes. they're perpetrating a, they're basically going to steal ice, right?
Mm-hmm.
From an ice shipment or something.
Yeah, and because there's only one planet left. Did they say in the galaxy or in the universe that has water?
In the galaxy.
Okay. Maybe,
I think they kind of throw that around loosely. I wouldn't say for sure if I could remember that they didn't say universe. Like it's possible, but essentially all water in the galaxy / the universe, all water that's available is gone. Like there's very little water and it's become this like valuable commodity, right? Like,
right.
That's the impetus for the pirates stealing the ice in the first place. And the Templars are the kind of controlling class of the ice that exists or the water that exists.
Did they say, and I missed it, like how are they converting all of this water into ice?
No. What?
That was
why
never
does that
explained.
Matter? What kind of question is that? That is irrelevant. Just throw that out. We're not even going to talk about that. Just, you know what? We're going to edit that one out. Just pretend like you didn't hear it.
Just, sorry. Yeah, not a real question.
No, it's a valid question because they do explain things. This film is like weirdly particular to detail, which is, I think, one of the reasons it's so enjoyable to watch.
Yes.
Right? Like, there are these callbacks to things that happened in like previous scenes, like, you know, even 10 minutes ago or longer. Like there's like these buildups. There's missed opportunities for buildups. But there are like buildups to like punchlines and things that happen in this film that are I think worth it, even if it's not to the standard that one might expect.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking to see if I could find the card. Let's see. I can pull it up right now.
They like show, they're like wandering around in this place and like they're sort of like traipsing through this spaceship or whatever, and they come across somebody sitting in a bathroom in a toilet stall with no stall doors, and your response to me was hilarious. You were like, no, don't eat them, it's the future.
You're like, there's no stall doors. It's like, no, you don't need them. It's the future. You know? And it's this scene where it's like, there's this goofy looking alien with these like spindly legs.
Yeah.
Like humanoid, like obviously a human actor with like a rubber mask. Is this where we were saying, this is where we were joking that was, who was the guy we said who like made a cameo or was like in this movie, but like you couldn't see their face. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Oh. Some famous person.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the card. Just to set the full, like the plot that they established.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Read it.
So long ago, after the great interplanetary wars, the galaxy has gone dry. Water has become the only thing left of value. Evil Templars, mind you.
Right. So there's like Knights Templar. Like that's a weird historical reference, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. So evil Templars from the planet Mithra have gained control of this life-giving resource. Their power is now absolute, except for a few rebel pirates who survive by stealing ice from the great Templar fleets. And that's like we open up on the gang of pirates stealing ice from the great Templar fleets, right?
Yes.
The scenes are great. Like it's like dark and moody on the spaceship, and like you're meeting the characters, and there's like there's practical effects of like the spaceship models with like the matte, like so matte layering, where like you have like, it's kind of like how we use green screen now, like you kind of have an object that you film and then you cut it out and you like lay it over other background video, basically. How that's done in with film is more complicated or different. Slightly more laborious, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the opening credits are like lots of scenes of these like spaceships flying around and, well, you know, static models being appearing to move through space,
right.
and the gang of pirates like planning to break onto the ship and like using a laser to like cut through the hull, and they have those fucking robots, these like battle robots that are just like these like clearly humans in these like bulky uncomfortable rubber suits that look like that have been sort of weathered and spray painted to look sort of metallic. They're absurd. The set design is like, how would you describe it?
So I would say that like it is only a one tier above the level of sophistication from the original Star Trek.
Yes. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it's exactly. Very boxy, like very geometric shapes, not like smooth curving shapes. There's like inexplicable lights and buttons on every surface blinking. I can just imagine
the director being like, can we get a blinking light in the background over here? Thank you.
Yeah. So everything looks like it might be some kind of esoteric instrument panel. Like it performs, in addition to being a wall, it is also like a feedback delivery device. And it is pretty dark. Like it's not it's not bright and well lit like, you know, for example, the Enterprise was in the Starship Next Generation.
Right. Right.
Or, it's Star, like oily, or Star Trek.
It's like an oily, dirty vibe, right?
Yes, like, it is. It's very like, so this is why it's part like there. I see a huge number of similarities between this movie and The Fifth Element. Like where Corbin Dallas lives in his house and he's like always chain smoking cigarettes. And it's kind of everything is a megalopolis at that point with like overcrowding and buildings high, high into the sky above cloud levels. And like everybody's flying around in flying cars and stuff. And everything's just like it carries forward this sort of like gritty metropolis feel. Of like a very well lived in space, like a heavily occupied space. So in every scene almost, there's just like shitloads of people coming and going who don't have anything to do with like directly interacting with the main characters as they move about. And it's, for the most part, yeah, it's kind of dark. There's not like bright overhead lighting. It's not clean. There aren't clean lines anywhere. It's just kind of a jumbled mess, which is great because it adds to this sort of like, you get the feeling that like there's a very large population everywhere you go in this movie, except later when they go to that desert planet with the ducks and the
right water. Like, but it's like appropriately, like when they're in a city, it feels full because there's whole bunch of fucking extras. Like, yep.
And there's like shitloads of robots everywhere scurrying around, like some that are like tiny, like the size of a trash can, and some that are like humanoid. And then you kind of like, I mentioned, I think at one point, like it's amusing to me that robots of the future, like you could imagine them to be anything, but they're always imagined to be in like a humanoid shape, which for sure is not the most ideal shape for a robot in most cases.
Right. Yeah. And it's also like full of those robots from the 80s that were like those white plastic, like big, broad domed, squat headed, weird things with like no neck.
Yeah.
Like, there are plenty of those, like that vibe of like, you could buy this toy if your parents were rich. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, relatively speaking, it wasn't that expensive, but at least when I was growing up, shit like that was just like, I'd see the advertisement for those like weird plastic robot toy things you could get and just wanted them so bad. Cause like in my mind, they were so much more capable than they actually were. Right.
Right. Like, yes. This robot's going to solve all my problems. It can't stand upright.
Yeah, and like they're functionally like a domed trash can on wheels. Like, it's
just yes,
with some floppy arms on the side.
Yes, I can't do anything. Yeah. Uh huh. Just okay, for looks.
Sorry. So continuing to derail. So where were we? We're at the beginning scene.
They come upon a lady in a glass case. Again, totally reminds me of The Fifth Element.
Yes. I do want to preface that there is the use of the N-word in this movie.
When did that happen? I didn't catch that.
They're at the bar, like when they go, they're like in the bar or something. I don't remember.
Oh my God.
Such a throwaway moment. And it's also like, for fear, like, first of all, I just have to preface this. Like, I am a, you know, I am a white middle-aged white man. I don't fucking know shit. Like, I have no, like if someone wants to write in and say this is the most racist bullshit ever, great, I'm not going to defend it. I'm just saying it's in there. Like, it's in there, and I guess to the credit of the film, like many of the tropes and stuff that's going on in the 80s, like going on at this time, they're, I would argue, potentially progressive about it, which is like one character says it, like an extra says it, and the other extra looks at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? No.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Like, and then, you know, almost like, I would argue that like this film would be lambasted by the woke police at this point for that kind of shit. Mm-hmm. Like, because it was very much like, my takeaway was the message was like, that's not appropriate to say that word.
Well,
we don't
and
call
then,
black, you know, like.
Yeah. And then they also, with the lady in the glass case, see, like, the main character makes some creepy comment about whatever happened to raping and pillaging. And they're like, no, you need to leave her within alone.
Within the first 5 minutes of the movie, you're just like, oh, skeezy fucking man shit going on here. Like, the guy, like he finds this woman, like, in this, like, you know,
unconscious glass stasis case.
Yeah, like in this, like, you know, like stasis case, opens it up, and then his first move is to try and peek down her blouse.
Right.
Like, lift up her dress to look in and see, like, look at her boobs.
Oh, God. But to your point, I completely missed the part with the N-word. Like, I didn't
it's
hear that
so
at
quick.
All.
And it's, yeah.
But I did notice the raping and pillaging thing, but I guess in both cases that we're pointing out here of ookie stuff in the movie, the other characters are quick to be like, no.
Yes. Yeah. So the reason I bring this up is it's like that. Well, as you pointed out, like, this is a very queer coded movie. Like,
oh my God,
there's a
yes.
lot of like positivity towards like alternative being.
Yeah.
And that being acceptable and okay. Like, it's, Yeah, so but that beginning scene, like he looks in her blouse, and then I think it's Angelica Houston comes in and is like, "What the fuck's going on here?" Basically,
yeah, and she's like an Amazonian woman in this. She's like a warrior, yes. And is like tougher, yes, than everybody else, and is a very few words.
Yeah, she's very like Xena warrior princess, yes, but in space, and like. I would argue too, like, she's wearing Mad Max costume while the, mm-hmm, rest of them are wearing pirate costumes. Like,
it's so very funny. Weird. Like, where did she come from? Why are they together?
It's almost like, it's almost like when they thought they had the $20 million, they were doing her costume.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, budget cut. Oh, look, I found this old trunk in the back of the costume closet. Like, check it out. Pirates. Let's all be pirates.
Yep.
And they're like, no, we spent a lot of time and money on Angelica Houston's costume. That's what she's wearing. Done.
Yeah.
So, move on. What do you mean it's incongruent? It's fine.
Oh, God.
What do you mean it's a non sequitur? It's great. Shut up. You don't know.
And then at one point, like, I recognize that, like, her costume at the front end of the movie looks like she's wearing giant fish spatulas on her front.
Yeah.
Like fish turner, you know, like the metal spatulas.
Those like spatulas that are like quite
slatted.
Almost like a net.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like slot. Yeah, heavily slotted. Yeah. It's so funny. I can't recommend this movie enough if this is the kind of thing that appeals to you. Like,
totally.
Know what you're getting, but holy shit.
It's really, it just feels like, to some extent, yeah, it feels like they were like, well, what's in this costume trunk over here? Pirates, great. It's a space pirate movie now, because that's all we can afford, and it's here, yes, so let's roll with it. Yes. You said, let's just push through no matter what.
Yes.
And I said,
just keep going. This movie is getting finished.
Yeah, I was like, this movie is like all the genres together, I said at one point.
Absolutely. It's delightful in its, I find it surprising, even watching it, having seen it when I was a kid. I think I watched this movie a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew it pretty well.
Yeah.
And watching it again as an adult, and also through the lens of like being more aware of like queer culture and, you know, and the modern era that we live in, and like understanding that, like, we don't, you know, gender politics and all of that. Like, I don't need to get into that too much. Like, that's, but my point being is like having some understanding and sympathy and seeing other people and then seeing this and being like, oh man, like I didn't grow up in that culture the way I was luckily exposed to it as I became an adult, and was older and was able, like, and accepted and able to, like, you know, both enjoy lots of my friends who have spent more time in it. But it's like watching that and being like, oh fuck yeah,
yeah,
like, this is amazing. I bet this was like this amazing like gem in the rough for a lot of kids who like were growing up with like wondering what the fuck was going on, you know.
Probably.
They're like, oh yeah, this life makes more sense now. Like, if they can make a movie like this, like, I can do anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Yes, anything is possible. This movie definitely, right, has a sense of anything is possible.
Yeah. Anyway, so that fucking creepy scene with the, like, the princess, and then he's like obsessed with stealing the princess.
Yes.
And there's some, like, there's some explanatory dialogue where he's like, no, like, the ransom, like, we'll take her in and we'll get the ransom. It'll be worth it.
It'll be worth it. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And then it kind of just segues into, you know, it just segues into, swashbuckling.
Yeah.
But first, robots battling robots.
Yep, there's a good deal of that, and it's as ham-fisted and awkward as you might imagine.
Yeah, and I think there's this...
like, one this robot element has a giant battle axe, and you're like, what?
Yes.
Where did...
Yeah, they're
again,
just like...
weird mixture of historical weaponry from the Middle Ages and, like, chainmail, yes, and future robots. Like, why would a robot have a battle axe?
And it's not that they don't have guns, because they keep using them and holding people at gunpoint. Like, guns are mostly used to, like, hold people at gunpoint for that scene. And then swords are used for action shit, because it's more fun to see people slashing at each other than it is to see people shooting.
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm fine with it. It's great. Whatever. Do it all.
I'll take everything, please. One of everything. It's like the whole menu.
Yeah. And then your response... like, we're talking about the, you're like, oh my fucking God, what happened to we rape and pillage?
Yes. He's like,
and then
because he's like, because he talks about stealing the woman out of the glass case, and like, and he's obviously like got some salacious attitudes towards her. And one of the, and he's like, one of his companions is like, no, leave her alone or whatever. He's like, whatever happened to we rape and pillage? And I'm just like, oh my God. You know, because we're pirates or Vikings, because or whatever, or Viking, like the or barbarian hordes, which were also a historical reference.
And all this is happening like in the first like 10 minutes. Like we haven't even really, and then your comment of like, oh my God, there's a painter's ladder. So like, yes, at some point they're in the bowels of the ship, and it's like this, the set is clearly some industrial processing plant, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, multi-level pipes and shit. And they're like, there's like a painter's ladder that the actor, some actor climbs up like two stories. It's fucking long.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, that guy, like that guy had to climb up that thing in the scene. Like,
and they don't do anything to make the ladder look like it belongs in its surroundings. It's just some guy's painting ladder from like the 1980s. Like you would recognize it like immediately.
Extended,
like your dad's like ladder.
Yes, exactly.
In the middle of a spaceship in the future.
Yes.
Oh God. And somewhere around here too, like Ron Perlman's character gets his hand chopped off very suddenly. And I actually like it didn't frighten me when I saw it, but it was just so unexpected that his hand flew off that I was like, ah, like I actually like half screamed, half laughed when it happened because it was so hokey, like the special effects. And then that just reminded me of when I was a really little kid and I saw Star Wars in the theater and Luke gets his hand cut off, and I was like traumatized by that.
Right.
Maybe so much so that every time someone gets a hand chopped off in a funny movie, now I scream. I don't know.
So he goes, so that happens and they're making their escape and he like grabs the hand.
Right.
And the hand is like in multiple, like the hand is just this recurring like subtle thing that's going on through the whole movie.
It gets brought along.
It gets brought along at some point. He like, at one point he like turns it into a pointer finger and like kind of picks his nose with it, but like not quite, like this
disembodied hand.
Yes.
Oh my God. Right around this point too, I noticed that the main character who has kind of like naturally curly hair and like a white guy afro of the time, my dad had the same haircut. Yes. He has a teeny tiny little ponytail in the back that's tied with a black ribbon in a bow.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, tiny ponytail on the main guy. Mm-hmm. Teeny tiny. And then it's out of nowhere, these people in white spandex bodysuits show up.
Yeah, so like there's the pirates in their piratey outfits, and then there's the Templars, which are wearing this like golden brassy colored chainmail, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's sort of silvery gold colored, and they're wearing like Knights Templar sort of like chainmail with like tunics.
Yes. They look like they're part of the fucking historical crusades.
And then the other characters that are on Team Templar are these like white haired like well fit spandex people, like wearing like these unitards. Those like those sort of like you know, like tank top one piece unitards with long legs, right?
Yeah.
Like full leg spandex and then all the way up over the shoulders.
Yeah.
And then that's it and nothing else. You know, like no underwear, like it's all just fucking hanging out there for the world.
Oh, yes. No dance belts here. We can't afford them.
What was it? Like the tight butts or something? It's just like all the tights.
Yes. It's like everybody's poured into these spandex suits. Like they're so tight and they're just like cat suits. I mean, they're not, it's bizarre. I think they had some printing on them, maybe some like writing or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, they have this black like 80s sci-fi font numbering and lettering on the front, and it's like different for each one of them.
That's right.
Because later we learn that they are basically eunuchs, or they're sort of slaves.
Yeah.
Castrated slaves.
And
lobotomized.
And lobotomized. Because they mention that. Yeah, you gotta get rid of all of the equipment. You want them docile and uncontested. The spandex thing really jumped out at me because it was the only thing in the movie that didn't remind me of another movie.
Yes.
Well, it just reminded me of Jazzercise.
Just Jazzercise. It does actually remind me of a Woody Allen film.
Really?
Called, I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay.
Let's see. Shit. It's like he did a sci-fi. Let's see. Sleeper. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I mean, I'm not necessarily advocating for Woody Allen, but
right.
That
or
movie.
Roman Polanski.
Or Roman Polanski. Yeah, either of those. But Sleeper was this like sci-fi comedy from 1973.
Really?
And it had... it kind of had that similar vibe. Like... Not exactly, but, you know, or that scene from, The Next Generation where, no, you're right. Like, I was thinking of The Next Generation when Wesley, is like, when they go to the Utopia planet and like all the people are wearing like almost nothing and like,
yes,
in their little, their like white rompers or whatever.
but that's romper planet.
Romper Planet, yeah. But that's not actually true. I think vibe-wise, it made me think of Sleeper, but it's, I looking at the pictures of Sleeper now, like, nobody quite had that. It was just jazzercise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just very much like, you know, unitard jazzercise situation going
totally.
On.
Totally. While we were discussing, like, the unitards and things like that, I also happened to notice that, so, because I was live chatting with you the whole time, I had two windows open. One window was showing the movie, and one window was our Gmail chat. And, because I hadn't maximized the video of the film, it was on YouTube, and they always have like suggestions of other things to watch in the right-hand margin of YouTube. And what I noticed was there was a list of movies that all are similar in some way to like tropes found in the Ice Pirates film, including Dune, Robin Hood Men in Tights, Galaxy Quest, Willow, and Dracula Dead and Loving It. And that was just what I could see. Like, I didn't even scroll down, but I was like, oh my God, each of those movies is like directly related to this movie in some stylistic or aesthetic or plot related way. It's so funny because they just like popped up and then I was like, oh my God, this movie does have everything. Like, it's related to all of these other movies in like easily recognizable ways. It's so funny.
So, so this first scene that we haven't even made it through 40 minutes into the podcast, the opening part when they break onto the ship, like they come through the bathroom, like they basically broke through like the wall into the bathroom. And then that's where we see the funky alien with the spindly legs and the weird rubbery mask. And the scene is like all, you see all the pirates going by. So it's like shot square on to the bathroom stall. Like you see like four stalls, and like in the first one on the left of the screen is the alien and the other ones are empty. And like you see all of the main characters walking by plus the robots, and each one is like passing back saying, take care of that guy, take care of that guy. And then the last guy is like, oh, sorry, buddy. And he like bonks him on the head to knock him out.
Right? Yeah.
And so then all the shenanigans, we kind of talked about them, like, you know, stealing the princess and running around the ship and all that shit. That happens. And then they're leaving. And you see there's like a scene while they're making their escape where the alien is there again, except he has a big bump on his
head. Yes, the big lump on his head.
Yeah. And it's like this movie is full of these like, I feel like, pretty decent callbacks to shit that happened.
It's super low budget, but it's also very thorough. Like, there is...
Yeah.
They may have, in fact, just rummaged through the set and found costumes and whatever else and just used what they had on hand. I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But there's so much... For how kind of, like, fluffy and silly this movie is and, like, low budget, there's so much fucking detail in each of these sets. Yes. All the sets are different. Like, so many different, like... filming sequences, so many different costumes, so many different characters, so many extras, so much, like, just so much shit is, like, stuffed into this movie. It's kind of miraculous. Like, it's not, like, it's not easy to just write it off. It's not a great movie, but it's also, like, there was a huge amount of effort put into it.
Yeah, like, I feel like every scene, it's clear that everyone who worked on this movie was really, like, put their heart into it.
Yeah.
with what they had.
Yeah.
Like, and I, you know, it occurs to me, and I have no way of knowing if this is true, but it feels like to me one explanation of this is like when the budget got cut, whoever kind of had control over, you know, the spending, like the producers and the director were like, well, everybody should get paid as much as we can pay them out for the time that we booked them. And so we're not going to spend any more money on any more materials or any of the other shit that we can easily cut without harming somebody. And so, like, they basically prioritize making sure all the staff and everybody, because, like, there's this huge amount of effort with these, like, janky, like, with janky equipment, right? Or, like, janky props. Like, it's like, yeah, we don't have any more money to, like, finish and polish this shit, but fuck it. Like, we're going to shoot all the scenes. We're going to have all the extras. We're going to have all the, like, on staff to, like, you know, do the lighting and everything. Like, we're going to do everything we can that, like, everybody who was already contracted and involved, like, we're not canceling contracts. We're just fucking doing this shit.
Yeah.
And it feels like that. Like, the scenes feel like
we're just going to do it.
Yeah. Like, they're like, well, I got this cardboard and some glue, but I'm going to make this pretty cool fucking robot. Like, you know, like, I can't afford paint, but I can't afford the robot. Here we go.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Or, like, the fucking, well, we'll get to that. So, they kind of make their escape. Or try to make their escape. The ship splits apart into three.
Right.
And they go. So, like, now Angelica Houston is, like, the captain of one of the split-off ships. And I can't remember. So, like, Ron Perlman and I should definitely give, what's his name? So, is it Michael Roberts?
Yes.
I think Michael Roberts plays Roscoe, and Roscoe, so Roscoe is this, like, robot mechanic. He's black, and that's important because they call it out a lot in the film, and he makes a lot of jokes about it. Like, it's important as well. Anyway, Roscoe. So, like, Roscoe's, like, sort of the, and then Ron Perlman is the computer expert, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Ron Perlman, his character name is Zeno. Michael D. Roberts, his character name is Roscoe. And then Robert Urich plays Jason. So, like, I think kind of the three of them. There might have been somebody else, but they're like, they get caught with the, like, they have the princess and they get caught.
Right.
And they get captured by the Templars.
Yes. Yeah. And then they're in a cage waiting, awaiting their future castration and to turn them into eunuchs. And in the cage, there's a guy who offers another guy half a gold piece for soup. And I immediately thought, oh my God, this is what I think of when I think of our dumb future and all the people who are buying gold right now as, like, a hedge against future calamity.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, I'd gladly give you, like, one whole gold bar for, like, a bite of soup, please.
Right. And he's like, no. That was, like, the most accurate part of this movie as pertains to our current, like, real world situation, I think.
Yeah.
I've got these gold bars I bought in the late 2000 aughts, and I'd like to trade them for... No.
I'm reading my comments to you on this movie, and I'm realizing there's a theme here, which is, like, I'm constantly struggling with, like, how to describe this movie. So one comment I go, I'm like, at one point I say, I'm like, I can't tell exactly what this movie is going for. Like, it's kind of serious and kind of comedy.
Right.
And you're like, I was just thinking that. Ugh. And also, is that wee ponytail a fucking hairpiece, or what is going on there?
Yes.
Just a callback to our earlier discussion. And then I go, like, it's not over the top Spaceballs, because it's not. Like, Spaceballs is, you know, a masterpiece.
Yep.
But it's not that. Like, right. It's kind of over the top Spaceballs. Yes, like, it's not that.
There's a fair amount of slapstick humor in this. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, the way that they castrate people is to put them on a conveyor belt with a chompy teeth thing at the end. Like, that's hilarious and, like, very slapstick. It's this movie has every genre in it. It's like the movie.
It's like the movie. And there's that guy. So, like, this extra, this like minor character in the jail and, like, along for the ride when they're getting castrated.
Yeah.
Keeps shouting power to the people. Walk off your jobs. Like, it's so funny.
Yes. Yes. He's like the socialist or, like, the Marxist.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. The Marxist. Like, he's just constantly shouting at the guards and, like, everybody. And the conveyor belt scene is, like, they're on the conveyor belt and they're going by these, like, workstations where these workers are just, like, doing shit to them. Like, one of them is where, these two guys who have dialogue. Again, like, this is what I mean. Like, it's like,
yeah,
these, it's their own only scene in the whole movie. And right. they have this like whole dialogue scene where these two guys are holding those orange hedge trimmers with yes. like the alligator teeth kind of, or not alligator, but yes. those like weird, you know, and they're not on, they're not plugged in. They're just holding them like upside down and kind of weird. Uh-huh. And they're waving them over, Jason, the main character. And you're kind of like, what are they doing? And then you kind of piece together that essentially the idea is it's like, it's cutting the clothing free.
Yeah.
Is the implication yeah. because then another worker comes up and pulls their clothes off. Right. And then there's like the woman with the shaving cream. Like she's just yes! kind of spraying like it just spraying shaving.
I referred to yeah. in our chat as shaving foam woman. Like I just
shaving foam woman. Yes.
The whole way through this, I just like am making random like statement call outs. Shaving foam woman, chopper teeth, class yes. struggle, genital mutilation.
like, just. And like the sound design, like, so when they're in the factory,
so good.
There's like this screaming going on in the background that's like, it's not realistic,
right.
but it's also like hugely within the theme and like the, uh-huh. like the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Like it's really funny. And like one of, so there's like the guy, like, so the shaving foam woman sprays him and then there's a guy, like an old man with a super shaky hand and a straight razor yes. to shave him. And like the guy's like, his like hand is just like, just incredibly wobbly and like the razor's all over the place and he just goes to shave him. And then there's the sort of like 80s, like gay coded,
yeah.
like, you know, stereotype of like the sort of like oversized purple vet, mm-hmm. like jacket and like the popped collar. There's like the gay man, right?
Yes.
With a straight razor who shaving. Goes to shave some other parts that we, you know, where you might shave.
Right.
And like, he's like winks and is excited to like, you know, get in there and do his business. Yeah.
Yes.
And like, it's just
super gay.
Super gay. Yeah.
And then at some point you said the lead guy is a better version of Mel Gibson.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And you were right.
Like, oh, at least, yeah. I mean, my feeling is that Robert Urich is a better Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Especially like as this movie goes on, because we'll get into the whole thing about there being what's it called? Mad Max.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh my
the
god.
Mad Max scenes.
There's some old lady who threatens to chop their dicks off. I was like, I'm with her. She's kind of dressed like a maid.
Yes.
Oh, I was like, I don't understand that, but
yeah. Like, so in the princess's chamber, like, to go back a minute, to never leave the first fucking scene.
Yeah.
Or the first like setting. There's a maid who's just wearing like a full on like 60s maid outfit, right?
Yeah.
Like not the super sexy kind, but like, you know, the like, or no, like from the you know, period piece, like the 1800s.
Yes. Yeah, like the lady who cooks your dinner at your
yes,
fancy
the
house.
Lady who cooks your dinner. Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, runs the vacuum and shit.
Yeah.
And like, it's so funny cuz she's just like, she hangs around, like she's the ladies' attendant, right? So then she's like, I think that's the same woman.
I think so too.
I think she's also the ball chopper who's yeah. like, so after they get processed and it turns out they don't get their balls chopped off, nor mm-hmm. they get lobotomized, they are then told to play along and they'll find out why they've been spared. And then they go to the slave auction, right? And mm-hmm. then the woman is there. The princess is there now and she's going to buy them.
Yep.
And so that's a whole scene that we don't need to get into too much. I mean, like, we could, but
yeah.
For the sake of brevity, because I do want to try and get this wrapped up in the next 15 minutes so I
yeah.
can go to work. So then they, like, kind of go to this party.
Yes, the party is so amazing.
The party is amazing, and that was the thing that really made me think, like, man, the level of costume design that's going on here. Like, so many different costumes. Yep. The whole scene, there's you're like, I want whatever drug makes you float.
Yes.
There's like, at one point they're like doing this drug that's sort of like holding headphones, like headphones upside down so that you hold the, like the bar, like the head piece
between your hand,
like under your chin.
Under your chin instead of over the top of your head. Yeah.
Yeah. Like for a moment. And then you get that like 80s electricity effect to their ears or whatever. And then she's all high and floats up into the rafters.
Yeah.
And it's like just nuts.
He tries
like
to look up her skirt.
Yeah.
And they chide him about that too.
Yeah, they chide him about that too. Like, that's the funny thing about this movie is it's like, it's full of that shit. Like, that misogynist, like, gross kind of man shit that's, like, not really appropriate.
Yeah.
Or, like, not really appropriate. It's, like, non-consenting, right?
Yeah.
But he's constantly chastised for it being non-consenting.
Right.
Like, when it's consenting, no chastisation.
Right.
Like, you know, there's a scene later where they fucking get it on, and that's fine. Like, she's like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Yep.
But, like, when he's not, it's, like, people around him. And it's not even her. It's, like, people around him are like, dude, fucking knock that shit off.
Right. Yes.
So they're wandering around. Now that they've been enslaved, they're wandering around, like, supporting them, like, being servants at the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the princess, like, talks to them and is like, I'm going to hire you guys to take me to this planet. And there's a whole the main plot, right, which is that the her father has either been killed by the temple, like her father had gone off exploring to find the fabled missing planet of water, right? Mm-hmm. Like the seventh planet or whatever
it was. And, the seventh planet.
Yeah. And she's like, hey guys, like I'm going to hire you to do this. Like she wants them to take her to the pirate planet. Yes. That's it. They're going to go to the pirate planet where she's going to find out information about what happened to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're like, great, so then, get you there in 3 days. And I'm like, what is 3 days in this context? Yes, exactly. Like, how do you measure a day?
What was in Orange County? Where were they going? What was the,
they're in Orange County, and Jack Black tells his brother that he can get him to Stanford, which is in Mountain View, California, in 3 hours.
And
in fact, it takes like nine.
Yeah, it takes like nine. Yeah, exactly. I get you there in 3 days.
Right. And then the main character, Jason, is like just chilling, you know, kind of like bragging about how capable he is of getting this woman to this planet that she wants to go to. And he's eating an apple. And I was like, where did he get an apple?
It's just like out of nowhere. But before then, before they get to the spaceship, they have to escape the party because one of the lead Templars figures out that the princess is actually trying to escape.
Uh-huh, yes.
And is like, stop them. And so there's an action scene where they're running and they get on one of those like 80s sci-fi motorcycles that's like a cheap dirt bike that's been like,
yes, you know, and it looks some, like Tron.
Angular metal. Yeah, it looks like Tron kind of.
Yeah.
And they speed off, and then two, like, I think, is it Ron Perlman and maybe it's not Ron Perlman. It's the other guy, the big guy who they met. Doesn't really matter.
Oh, anyway, yeah, I don't remember.
But Michael D. Roberts, Roscoe, and this other guy, this big guy, I think it's Killjoy, or anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They get fall off the motorcycle. So, like, four people on a motorcycle right away, two of them fall off. They're standing on the street corner hiding from the cops, slash the Templars, and this robot comes up to them, and it has like a TV. So this is before LCDs, right? So TVs were cathode ray tubes, which are these like big bulky light bulb looking things with a flat panel, and it shoots an electron gun. Anyway, it's got this TV in its chest, and it's like showing this like woman who's like sort of undressed, like a bust of this woman, like sort of undressing. And he's basically like, hey, blood, like, let me, like, he's a pimp.
Yes.
Right? He's like, and he's like negotiating with them, and they're like, knock it off, man. Like, we got it. We're doing something else right now. And he's like, the robot's just like trying to get them to like go see boobies or whatever. He keeps saying, like, you want to see the boobies? And or titties. I can't remember if it's titties or boobies. Space titties. Anyway. But suddenly he's like, you know, transportation included. And they're like, transportation, you say? And so they like steal his car and fuck off.
Yeah.
So to kind of keep things moving, they get to the princess.
Right. They steal a car and they catch up to the motorcycle that they fell off of.
And like this scene is like, This is the thing about this movie is, like, every scene is, like, a new set, almost.
Yes, it's, like you said, the fucking details are amazing. Like, it's not, they're not great, it's not high quality, but it's, like, so thorough. Like, what did you say? They're not, every scene, I'm amazed at the sets, they're not good, but every scene is, like, high effort.
Yes, yeah, high effort, exactly. Mm-hmm. It just, it feel, you feel the love of it. Like, people are like, man. And, like, the main, so, what's his name? Robert Urich.
Yeah.
Like, not great acting in this movie. No. But not terrible. Like, he's just sort of,
it's
like,
fine.
Like, you can almost tell, like, almost all the actors are like, yeah, the budget's cut. This is a fucking
I mean,
watch.
Like, I
we're
feel
just
like,
going to kind of laugh and say our lines and do the best we can.
I feel like he embodies and exemplifies what it was like to be a mediocre white guy in the 80s. Like,
yes,
you don't have to be great or witty or strong or anything. You're still just going to be, like, yes, perfunctorily in charge of everything.
Yes,
you're number exactly. one, even though you, like, yes, really are kind of half phoning it in, you know?
Yes, exactly.
There was... right around this time in the film, there's, like, the runaway spike dick shows up, which they refer to as space herpes, like the ship gets space herpes. Yes. But what it looks like to me is a penis and a leech from a lake had a love child in space, and it was irradiated, and this is the result.
Like, and it's, like, gross and kind of slimy and bumpy and spiky.
And it moves like a house centipede, so, like, it's really creepy because it's kind of buggy. I don't know. I was like, I think what I said was, you said space herpes, and I said, this is strong Gremlins vibe for me right now.
Yep. And then you capture the scene so good when they're kind of, like, discussing it to other characters, and then one of them is like, they're like, he knows what it is, and he doesn't want to say. He's like mumbling. Yeah. He's like, space herpes. And at some point he, like, turns, and you just, in the chat, you just nailed it so good, because he's like, ship just got herpes. Yes. Like, really slow, like, just very ridiculous line delivery. At this point, I think I tagged this, like, we tag in our chat, like, kind of like a hashtag FCBM, if we want to know, we want to do it.
All the 80s films in one. Yeah.
All the 80s films in one.
So perfect.
Yeah. Like, the so then they get to the pirate planet, and you're like, gratuitous little people in the cast, no real role, just everywhere.
Yes, there's just
to, like, add to the weirdness.
Yeah,
it's like very 80s, right? It's like lots of little persons. Like,
yep, and
know.
And this is why I think in the suggestions on the side of the of the menu on YouTube, they were like, Willow. notoriously starring a famous little person, and I was like, kind of like, oh man, this is the only thing that they don't really, like, call out that has become a cliche instead of a trope, which is that, like, there's all these little people running around in the background, and, like, people with differently abled bodies. Like, I saw someone who was playing a robot whose lower half had been chopped off, and so they were, like, basically, like, intact from the torso up, and but didn't have legs, and so they were using their hands to walk around, and them and the little people were in the background, and there's tons of them everywhere, but none of them has a speaking role or, like, interacts with the main cast, and I was like, oh, that doesn't age well at all.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And then they go up to a bar that's called the Pirate Den, and it's written in, like, computer font and neon. It's
that,
so,
like,
great.
80s, like, sci-fi font.
Yes.
Yeah, so
oh,
good.
God. And then the lady from the Poltergeist, who's like, I have exorcised the demons. She's in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. So at some point in the bar, Angelica Houston gets to show off her, like, amazing Amazonian prowess and cuts the guy's head off.
Oh my god, decapitated, like, head.
Yeah, like, is completely not impressed by this dude and his, like, swordsmanship, and does the, like, the Indiana Jones pull out a gun and shoot a guy with a sword move.
Yeah.
Like, except she just cuts his head off with another sword. But
right.
It's the same kind of vibe. Like, he's, like, doing all this shit, showing it off, and then he stops, and then she's like, does one move and his head falls off. Which is great. And then of course there's, like, some more gross man shit where, like, they're like, he's like, oh, well, we need to bribe that official. And And
yeah,
and she's like, well, we have lots of water, we'll be able to bribe him. And then the main character Jason or whatever is like, nah, you can't, like, he's a government official, but you can go bribe him with sex, basically. He doesn't say that, but he's heavily implied that you need to go sleep with this guy so we can do their next thing.
Right.
And so she's like, ugh, fine, whatever. And she's like, doesn't want to, but she goes over there. And then it turns out that he is a she, and it's kind of an alien woman. Yes. So, like, you can't really tell, like, the implication is you can't tell the gender. And so then she comes back all smiling and is like, yeah, I'm not her type. And so then Jason has to go over and be the flirty.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so it's like that reverse, like, kind of a classic at this point, like, definitely a trope.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, one more time, I feel like they're like, fuck you. Like, what if this was reversed? This is gross. Right.
Right.
And so,
she's like driving them in a car and she's sitting next to Jason and she keeps flirting with him as she's driving this crazy car on a desert planet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like nuts.
Yeah. I do love how, like, for the most part, they basically, like, will say something messed up and then will immediately, some other character's job to, like, immediately correct it and be like, no, that's messed up.
Yeah, like, it's not a brilliant display of, like, social commentary and, like, you know, attempt to, like, correct, but it is there.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
You know.
And yeah, because if you're a kid and you're watching this, you're going to get the message.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be sophisticated. It doesn't have to be, like, you know, an academic argument against racism, sexism, and classism. Like, it.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, it's, I think it's a really, I think it's commendable.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, but I would like to hear what other people think about that, because I, you know, like I said,
totally.
Coming from a middle-aged white man who loved this movie as a kid, like, I could be completely...
I feel like this movie is, like, body positive, too.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Like, it's... All the people are not plastic. Like, there's some...
Right!
Early hints of that, but it's like...
They still look like people. Like, they're just people with normal bodies. They're not, like, the plastic people who are famous now.
With normal bodies. Like, they're, like, you know, their proportions are normal. They're not, like, this over-exaggerated, like, spindly stovepipe legs and weird over-proportioned boobs or whatever.
Right.
Like, it's just, you know, it's all more, like, you know, a gamut of people you're gonna see. And main character roles and in side roles and all of the things. Which is cool. So I'm gonna skip over some stuff, like, so the Mad Max scene happens, like, it transitions and they drive in their Mad Max vehicles, which are fucking amazing, and I would love to talk more about that, but my time is starting to run short.
Right.
So that happens. They go meet this old guy who is going to tell them about he was on the expedition to the seventh planet with her father.
It does exist.
It does exist. And, like, I love that part where basically the main character is like, dude, you got old. And he's like, yeah, I lost 20 years and 20 seconds.
Yes, the time warp.
And your answer is like, next time someone asks me what I've been up to, I'm gonna make that face and say time warp. Time warp.
What's been going on with you? Time warp.
Time warp.
I just have to say, that man has ducklings, piglets, and baby donkeys on a planet with no water. I don't know what the ducks are doing there, but I love it.
It's amazing. And they're, like, following the characters around for the rest of the movie.
Yes, they just tag along. They've got these farm animals with them.
Yeah, and so they, like, you know, they have this interaction with him, and then they get back on the ship and they fly away to go find the planet after they learn that there's a very particular coordinate corridor that they must travel through or be lost forever in the time.
Yes.
And so then there's these, like, ridiculous scenes that happen that I think what I just want to get to is the final scene is this, like, this build up to this insane sequence of action events that are, so they're being chased by the Templars into the time warp, and the Templars join them.
Yes.
And the ships are joined such that the Templars, like, bring a raiding party, right, onto the ship.
Yep.
And so then there's all the combat that ensues on the ship, like the robots fighting and the main characters fighting. And meanwhile, you're going through the time warp, and so there's the strobe lights are happening. Oh my god, so many strobe lights in this movie. Strobe lights are happening, epilepsy warning, or, you know, light
sensitive warning. Yes, yes.
And the characters are, like, fighting and staging these like full scale combat things happening on the ship, like in these industrial center settings, mm-hmm. right? And meanwhile, time is flashing forward by years.
Yeah,
and
like so, going by really fast. Everybody's aging like crazy.
Yeah, everybody's aging like crazy. So it's like in one scene, they're young and fighting, and the next scene, they're like old and my knees hurt. Like not even next scene. It like flashes, and in the middle of combat, they're like, now I'm old. And I fell down off this thing. And like, and so all the humans are getting old. The robots are just doing the robot
robots,
thing.
Right.
And, and a note on the robots, they're like moronic, right? Like they can barely function. They often can't see shit correctly. They're swinging wildly at stuff.
Yep.
They're cutting their own arms off and pulling bolts out and falling apart. Yes. Like it's ridiculously comedic in many ways.
Yeah.
But at some point, the main character is just such an asshole dude. He like, apparently he like sleep, you know, oh, right. Sorry. The sex scene before this.
Yes.
He sleeps with the princess, and it's hilarious because they like go into this like
what holodeck, is it? Basically.
Like they're like, he's like, oh, just stick it in like the disc into the thing to set the tone, like set the mood for the holodeck.
Yes.
Thing that they go in, and then the computer is like, your scene is ready, and then they like make love on a cliffside in the rain.
Yeah, like, and I was like, I would not be okay with getting this much rain on me.
Yes, exactly. It'd have to be so warm for that to be okay. Yeah, it's like and like it's to me, it's like sort of the equivalent of like having sex on a big pile of money, because it's like the point is like water is so precious, and here it is just showering everywhere, blowing around.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, so then the raided party happens and all the combat happens and they start flashing forward. So the princess is pregnant.
Right, because the time flashes into the future.
Yeah, time flashes into the future. So now Jason, the main character, has
a kid.
And he like shows up at their, like he shows up and she's like, here, meet your son as a baby. And he's like, looks at it and he's like, nah, I don't have time for that. And fucks off.
Yeah.
Like just, and so she's like stuck raising this kid, and like the next time you see her, it's like the kid is like a you know 12-year-old or some shit. And then at the end of this whole segue, Jason, the main character, the actor Robert Urich, plays his son, and now he's like, the character Jason is old and the princess is old, and like she's like walking over to him and they're like about to get killed or something, and her hair gets stuck on like some spiky thing, because she has this like impossibly long gray hair, and it like gets stuck on something, and it's like clearly not meant to have happened, but they just leave it in.
Yeah, and she's like a fucking pro. They're like, we can't afford the edits, just keep going.
Yeah. And so then she like, they like, and then her son or their son is like, Dad, Mom, I did it. And like he's like saves the day.
Yeah.
And then that's, so I watched this review by Red Letter Media.
Yes.
And they were, and I agree with this, like the one guy on the review, he was like, and that's where they should have just ended the film.
Yep.
But they don't, as he pointed out, and I tend to kind of agree, they kind of chickened out. And so then there's like a flash and they made it through the time warp and now everything goes back to the age that they were and everything.
The kid disappears. And
the kid disappears and they end up at the planet.
Right. And then they meet the gay coded person on the throne who becomes disembodied head, right?
Wait, that, we missed that whole, that was like before all of this.
Oh,
fuck,
shit.
I forgot all about that. They go to the Amazonian planet.
Yes.
To find her dad.
Which
first.
Is all like women wrestlers, very muscular women in bikinis who are like warriors, and like I remember this was a whole thing in like the 1980s when women first got into wrestling, and it was kind of like coded for kink, like you could hire professional women wrestlers to come wrestle with you, and like the whole idea was like men who were into dominating women as a kink would like hire these women wrestlers to come squeeze them with their thighs and stuff. I watched a whole documentary on it, and so there's like this whole planet, there's like in the kitchen there's like hands that come out of the wall to be like helping hands, and I was like, oh my god, that is so kinky too, like, you know, in a hot second it's like, what do I need these hands for? Oh, hand jobs. They're basically like futuristic glory holes. God. Right.
I feel like we've missed a whole good segment. So the king of the Amazons or whatever is this guy played by Bruce Valanche.
Valanche. Yeah.
And he is a like notable writer for sort of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he does it, and he's like, I think as you said, he's like sort of gay coded, and he ends up just being
totally. He's super gay. He has my grandma's glasses with, like, they were popular in the 80s where the frames, the glass in the glasses, the lenses were very large. And then the earpiece that extends from the lens back to over your ear is like set very low on the frame. So, like, they're totally, my grandma had those glasses. My aunt had those glasses in the 80s. Yes. We have a family photo where they're both wearing them. And he, like, loses his head. And he's just a disembodied head for a while, but that explains like why all of these wrestling women are his henchmen, because like he's not into them because he's like gay, and it's so great. Oh my god, I love. And I, at this point, in, when we were chatting, I was like, "This movie is 110% queer." I was like, "Fucking queer kink." The hands in the walls. There's a tickle torture scene. The wrestling bikini ladies. Like the further that you go into the movie, the queerer it gets. It's so great.
Yeah. All right, I have to go.
Okay. So, like that's basically it. Like they they like have the weird like experience, and then they like they are young again, and then like the movie kind of ends because they're approaching Earth, which is apparently like the seventh planet or whatever, and like it's oriented in the frame so that Saudi Arabia is like front and center. It's just like hilarious. I pointed that out. I don't know, that's all the movie. We basically made it through the whole thing.
Woohoo! Yeah, we did it. All right, well, thank you so much for listening. Again, please write us an email, Dana, D-A-N-A, at fcbam.io.
See this movie. Just watch it just for the fact of, like, the weirdness and, like, the queer-coded stuff. Like, it's a great gay movie. And, like, the there's all these weird things that it has positivity about. And, like, I don't know. It's great. It's a great movie. I was so much better than I was expecting it to be.
Right? Right? Yeah. No, it was really a delight.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.